Live from the nation's capital, President Joe Biden and comedian Colin Jost headlined the White House Correspondents' Dinner. See all the biggest stars together in one room live April 27th at 8 p.m. on CNN and streaming on Max.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
We've been waiting for the next move after the killing of a notorious Iranian general. Now it's happened. A new airstrike on Iranian-backed forces in Iraq just a day after the drone strike against Qasem Soleimani at Baghdad airport. That's according to the militia in question and the Iraqi state news organization. We don't know who's responsible for this new airstrike. President Trump today said he ordered the killing of Soleimani to stop a war, not start one. Those are his words. Tonight, new hostilities. A remarkable statement from a former defense secretary and CIA director, Leon Panetta, who's not known for wild exaggeration, calling this the closest we've been in 40 years to war with Iran. So with America now sending about 3,000 troops into the region, with Americans being told to leave Iraq, with Iran calling for, quote, forceful revenge for Soleimani's killing, we'll explore all of that, all of what may follow from perhaps the most consequential decision this president has made. There's also a new claim from the administration on the question of why now. National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien telling reporters that General Soleimani was planning attacks on U.S. troops and diplomats in the region, something the president touched on as well today.
He was plotting attacks against Americans, but now we've ensured that his atrocities have been stopped for good. They are stopped for good. He was planning a very major attack, and we got him.
Qasem Soleimani, make no mistake, had plenty of blood on his hands, some of it American, much of it. His Quds Force and its allies in the region have caused turmoil for decades. Other presidents have considered killing him as well, decided not to because of what might follow. This president, though, decided differently. As you'll hear in a moment, he did so without consulting or notifying lawmakers who may normally be have been in the loop. And now we're about to see what happens next. We've got correspondents tonight in Tehran, Baghdad, the Pentagon, and with the president, as well as some of the best strategic thinkers that we know. I want to start with this new airstrike and CNN international correspondent Jamara Karadze in Baghdad. So, Jamara, what are we learning about this latest strike? Where did it take place? What about it?
Well, Anderson, what we know is the statement that was put out by the Popular Mobilization Force, that is that umbrella group that is mostly made up of these Iranian-backed Shia militias. And they say that one of their convoys was targeted in an airstrike north of Baghdad in the town of Taji. They say it was a medical unit that was targeted. They say a number of militia members were killed in this strike. Some were wounded, but they say no leaders were killed in this alleged airstrike. But just to give you a sense, Anderson, of how tense the situation is, how everyone is really on edge here, just a short time after the reports came out of this reported airstrike, there were rumors that a senior figure in the Popular Mobilization Force had been killed in this airstrike. The PMF had to put out a statement saying that the senior leader was not killed. He himself had to put out a statement saying that he was not killed. So far, there is no indication, no confirmation that this was a U.S. airstrike, Anderson.
There's also no independent confirmation that this actually occurred. This is basically the claim is being made by an Iranian-backed Shia militia force, correct?
Absolutely. This is just a statement coming from them. We have not seen any visuals. We have not heard this from any other source. And the concern at a time like this is rumors and disinformation, Anderson.
Yeah, Jamara Karadze, appreciate it. Thanks very much. For more on what went into the president's decision, I want to go to CNN's Caitlin Collins just outside Mar-a-Lago. So, Caitlin, what are you learning about the timeline of how this strike came together?
Well, we know that in recent days, that's when the president made the final decision that he was going to authorize this strike, Anderson. And that came after national security officials and White House lawyers had been meeting to develop essentially a rationale, an option for the president to do this, a backing that he could do this without going to Congress for approval, something you're seeing him take heat from today from Democrats over that decision not to go to some of those congressional leaders for this, instead going to some of his allies like Senator Lindsey Graham. And essentially, once they felt they had that backing and the president made this decision, that's when they decided to move forward. Now, the president had been maintaining a pretty similar schedule to what he's been doing while he's been here in Florida, but we're told that he was being constantly updated by those national security aides, like the national security advisor Robert O'Brien, while he was here. And he even canceled a planned round of golf this morning so he could continue to monitor what the reaction was.
And so that's what the president was doing. He's been gauging the reaction to the strike.
Yeah, he has. He's been on the phone. He's been in conversations. Essentially, what it was described to me by sources is he's surveying people on what they think of his decision. Now, it hasn't all been positive. He's gotten some pushback from people. And I'm told by sources that in these conversations, the president has been sure in his decision, defensive of it at times. But when it comes to what's next and what the president thinks Iran could do in response, sources say he's been pretty unsure of what that could look like.
And when is the president scheduled to return to the White House?
On Sunday. So today we saw him for the first time publicly in several days when he went to Miami. He's now back at Mar-a-Lago right here behind me, and he's not scheduled to go back to Washington until Sunday. And he's going back, and he's going to have a lot on his plate, Anderson. Essentially, A, waiting to see how Iran responds to this, because sources say it's essentially a case of when, not if. He's also dealing with North Korea and that recent statement from the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. And, of course, this looming impeachment trial, which you saw those congressional leaders addressing from the Senate floor today. A lot going on for the president. He's dealing with a lot at once.
Caitlin Collins, appreciate it. As you mentioned, as we touched on at the top, the president did not notify the four top Democrats in the so-called Gang of Eight before taking action. That would be the top Democrats on the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, House Speaker Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. About Senator Schumer, he retweeted this, suggesting that discussing the raid with Schumer would have been like tipping off the Iranians. In fact, notifying top lawmakers in both parties has been the rule, not the exception, until this administration, even for the most sensitive operations like the killing of Osama bin Laden. As you might imagine, it's not sitting well with Democrats. Just before airtime, I spoke with Senator Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Maryland. Senator, I know that a member of your staff was briefed today regarding the strike. I know there's no specifics about that that you can reveal. But did the briefing impact your view of the strike? Do you have the information that you would like to have?
Well, Anderson, it's good to be with you. Yes, there was a briefing for staff members, and I had a representative there. And no, nothing that came out of the briefing changed my view that this was an unnecessary escalation of the situation in Iraq and Iran. While I can't tell you what was said, I can tell you I have no additional information to support the administration's claim that this was an imminent attack on Americans. And obviously, the issue of intelligence is important, especially given the fact that bad intelligence, false intelligence, is what got us into the earlier war with Iraq.
It is interesting because this President Trump has obviously been very critical of U.S. intelligence, the U.S. intelligence community, and yet he is now basing this on what he says was intelligence about. An attack being planned. Do you believe the administration?
Well, my view is you've got to be shown the evidence. There will be a briefing for senators on Monday. I hope the administration will come prepared to present the evidence about their claims at that time. But I think the bigger question right now is, how did we get to this spot? And the reality is that for the last 3 years, this administration has engaged in a reckless maximum pressure campaign on the Iranians with no end game. I mean, we don't know what the administration's end game here. And here we are today, closer to war with Iran than we've ever been, even though the president during the campaign said he wanted to keep us out of unnecessary wars in the Middle East.
President Trump said today that they took action last night to stop a war. We did not take action to start a war. He also added that the world is safer without Soleimani. Do you believe it is safer now?
I think the world is more dangerous. It's certainly a more dangerous place for Americans in the region today than it was yesterday. And if that was not the case, you would not have had the State Department issuing today a warning urging Americans to leave Iraq. They did that today. Today, the administration announced we're sending 3,000 more troops to the region. So clearly, the administration recognizes that this action has actually dramatically increased the risks in the Middle East, increased the risks of an attack from Iran. And it should be no surprise to anybody who's followed these issues that Iran does mean what it say when it what says when it what says that this is a essentially tantamount to an act of a war.
Do you have any concerns that impeachment or domestic politics may have factored into President Trump's decision?
Well, we know from the tweets that have surfaced today from 2012 that this was an idea that President Trump had. He, of course, at the time, ascribed these motives to President Obama. President Obama, of course, did not attack Iran. But it was President Trump who obviously had this idea back in 2012. So, look, I think that we're in a very, very dangerous place. The president has taken us to this place without a strategy, without an end game. And it's going to be up to Congress on a bipartisan basis. And I worry, given the polarization in Congress today, that you're going to have more of our Republican colleagues acting as rubber stamps for the administration. But Congress really needs to stand up and make clear the president cannot take us to war in Iran without a congressional authorization.
Senator Van Hollen, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Good to be with you.
So there's obviously a lot of moving parts to this. We have a correspondent in Tehran we're going to get to shortly. Iran's UN ambassador has just weighed in, telling CNN that, killing General Soleimani was an act of war against his country. In Iran's capital, protesters burned American and Israeli flags, chanted anti-American slogans, some carrying portraits of the dead general as their government vowed revenge. Fred Plankton is part of the only Western television crew on the ground in Tehran. He joins us right now. So, Fred, the Iranian leadership are vowing retaliation. I suppose, assume they haven't given any clue as to what that may actually look like.
No, they certainly haven't at this point in time, but they certainly have made clear, Anderson, that there is going to be retaliation and it's going to be painful for the United States. And the supreme leader of Iran, he came out earlier today and, of course, he praised Qasem Soleimani. He called him a hero of the Iranian nation. He said that Qasem Soleimani had always wanted to die a martyr for the Iranian nation. But I think one of the other things that he said was absolutely key. He said, look, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Quds Force, the one that Qasem Soleimani was the head of, is not going to miss a beat. He said there are other generals there. He's already named a successor to Qasem Soleimani, and that organization is going to be just as dangerous as it was before. And so, therefore, the Iranians are saying, look, the United States really needs to watch out. And so, what exactly the Iranians are going to do? There's two things, Anderson. I've been to this country, I think, 15 or 16 times now. There's two things that the Iranians have always told me. They've said, look, the United States needs to understand that next to every American military base in this region, there are some sort of force that's close to Iran or controlled by Iran. And so those, of course, now are very much under threat. The other thing that the Iranians have been talking about a lot over the past couple of years has been the development of their ballistic missile program. So those are two things that they've been saying. Obviously, they've not been showing their hand yet, but there's what they have been saying is that there is going to be a response, and that response is going to be painful, and it's going to be on Iran's time, not America's time, Anderson.
Soleimani, I mean, in terms of striking at the heart of the Iranian regime, this is as close as really anybody could get. Soleimani isn't just some general. He is a general who has been involved in every basically foreign adventure and foreign conflict and foreign interference that Iran has been conducting.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, I think it's hard to overstate just how important a figure Qasem Soleimani was, not just in the military sphere, but also really in the public sphere here in Iran, increasingly over the past couple of years. He was someone who was definitely one of the most popular figures here in Iran for a very long time, one of the most respected, I would almost say more than popular here in Iran. He was certainly someone who, as you say, was a part of pretty much every conflict over the past almost 20 years. He was obviously in the Iran-Iraq War. He was in the Iraq War, fighting against the United States there since 2003. He was in Lebanon, then fighting against ISIS, drumming up a lot of support in Iraq against ISIS as well. So he's certainly someone who has really been a part of a lot of these conflicts. And there was almost a sort of myth around Qasem Soleimani. He was someone who was always very elusive as well, who all of a sudden would turn up on the battlefield, would drum up some sort of militia, and would make that militia stronger. So you're absolutely right, Anderson. This is someone who was an extremely important figure. And by the way, also someone where there were rumors here in Iran that maybe in the future he might actually go into politics. There were people who were already talking about maybe in the future he could become the president of Iran if it was something that he chose to do. So this is certainly not just the killing of a top general that took place, but really one of Iran's top figures that took place there in that drone strike that the U.S. Conducted. And that's also one of the reasons why you're seeing such a big public reaction and such big public mourning as well, Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a lot of people who have feared Soleimani, not just, respected him or admired him. They were, feared him. The Revolutionary Guard has obviously, gone after any opposition inside Iran itself. And Soleimani is obviously a part of that. But publicly, obviously, people are limited in what they would say to a foreign correspondent. But publicly, what have been the public signs of that the regime is allowing in terms of, I assume, demonstrations in favor of Soleimani or mourning him?
Yeah, I mean, demonstrations have definitely been taking place. There was a pretty big demonstration that took place in front of the Swiss embassy here in Tehran today. The Swiss, obviously, are the ones that are essentially representing the U.S.'s interests here in Iran and also communicating with the Iranian government as well. So you have seen some protests taking place. You've seen huge mourning take place, for instance, in Kerman. That's the hometown of Qasem Soleimani, and we expect to see more of that as well. But I think that point that you made is absolutely correct. It is obviously also a figure, Qasem Soleimani, who was not only revered, but also very much feared, especially over the past couple of months, not just outside Iran, but inside Iran as well, Anderson.
Fred Platon, appreciate it. Thanks very much. We're going to check in with Fred in our second hour tonight. Coming up next, an update on the U.S. troops now heading into the region and what their mission will be, that and our national security team on what comes next, and frankly, how bad Iran could make things in the region, what their options are in terms of a strike at the U.S. or allies, also around the world. Later, there's breaking news on impeachment. Late word that House Democrats could be getting ready to hand over articles of impeachment to the Senate. As we continue to listen for any late word on this new reported airstrike north of Baghdad, which we do not know, we have not been able to independently confirm that, American ground forces are heading into the region, elements of the 82nd Airborne. It's certainly quite a change for a president who until recently was focused mainly on what he said was pulling troops out of the region. CNN's Alex Marquardt has the latest now on the new development. The new deployment joins us with that. So what exactly do we know about how many troops and where they're going to be deployed?
Well, Anderson, what was announced today is the third wave of U.S. troops to be sent to the region just this week. This latest tranche, if you will, is some 3,000 U.S. Army soldiers from the 82nd Airborne. As you know, they come from the Immediate Response Force Brigade. They are going to Kuwait, not to Iraq, in response, the Pentagon says, to the increased threat levels against U.S. targets in the region. This was expected to be announced today in the wake of the attacks earlier this week against the U.S. embassy. So we did have a sense that they were going to be going over there. This, of course, before the attack against Qasem Soleimani, but the White House was, of course, thinking about that at the time. Anderson, we also have to think about the 5,000 U.S. troops who are already in Iraq. Of course, they've been there for long period of time. They've been training Iraqi forces. They've been fighting against ISIS. There is now a chance that they may be kicked out. There are a lot of Iraqi politicians and officials who are really ticked off about this attack against Qasem Soleimani. They want to see those American forces kicked out. The Iraqi prime minister is saying that this was a flagrant violation of the U.S.-Iraq security agreement.
And we heard from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs as well, and he spoke today about the strike. Can you just fill in kind of exactly what he said?
Yeah. Ever since the strike, one of the bigger questions is why now? Qasem Soleimani has been known for so long. He has been in the crosshairs of the U.S. military before. There's been plenty of reason to take him out before because of what he has done against U.S. forces, killing and maiming thousands of them. So Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, spoke to reporters today, including CNN's Barbara Starr. He said that it was this response, the strike against Soleimani, was very much because there were imminent attacks that were being planned by Soleimani. He was asked if there is a risk against U.S. forces. He said, damn right, there is a risk. We would be culpably negligent if no action was taken. And in sort of responding to this criticism that there wasn't much foresight given to what can happen now that Soleimani has been killed, he did say that those consequences were taken into consideration, but the risk of inaction, Milley said, exceeded the risk of that action against Soleimani. Anderson.
Alex Marquardt, appreciate it. I want to get some perspective now from our chief international correspondent, Clarissa Ward, also senior political analyst Josh Rogan, and retired Army Lieutenant General Mark Hertling. Currently, he's a CNN military analyst. Clarissa, obviously, I mean, the big question here is what comes next and if this is going to ultimately lead to some sort of broader conflict in the region. You spent a lot of time there. I'm wondering how you think things may go or how fragile you think things are right now.
I think this is absolutely an inflection point, Anderson. I think there's a huge amount of anxiety in the region at the moment, even among people who are jubilant at seeing the death of Qasem Soleimani, as to how exactly Iran will respond, because there is a broad consensus that Iran has to respond, given the gravity of this killing, given what a towering figure Soleimani was, not just in Iran, but across many different countries. And so the question becomes, what does that look like? Where does it take place? Look at all the different countries where Iran's proxies extend their tentacles to, whether it's Yemen, whether it's Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Afghanistan. You're talking about many different prospects, the Persian Gulf, shipping channels, the Straits of Hormuz. They have a plethora of different options at their disposal, different ways that they can launch an attack. And I think the question that people are asking now is, when that inevitably comes, whatever form or shape it takes, how is this White House planning to respond to it? What is the broader strategy here going forward? It's less that people are critical of killing someone like Soleimani and more that there's deep-seated anxiety that this is reckless if there isn't a more coherent strategy that is guiding this policy as it moves forwards through what will undoubtedly, Anderson, be very choppy waters.
Josh, I know you've been talking to sources about what may have actually led to this strike. What have you learned?
Well, basically what they said is that after the attack on the U.S. embassy, there were streams of intelligence that Iranian-backed forces were planning three types of attacks: another attack on the embassy, missile strikes on American forces in Iraqi bases, and the kidnapping of American citizens, which helps explain why the State Department told all Americans to leave. Based on that intelligence, according to my sources, the strike was authorized and then it was taken at the first opportunity. Now, the problem is, as Clarissa mentioned, what next? The administration doesn't have any answer. I went to a State Department briefing today, a background briefing, and the officials basically said the ball's in Iran's court and we are trying to de-escalate. Actually, one official said this was an act of de-escalation. Well, if this was an act of de-escalation, I shudder to think what an act of escalation might look like. And if the stated goal was to deter Iranian aggression, well, when they're threatening to attack us publicly, it's clear that they're not yet deterred.
General Hertling, I mean, you certainly spent a lot of time in the region, fighting in the region, in Iraq. General McChrystal said that this was the appropriate move by the U.S. to take out Soleimani. He also said there's a potential for, quote, stair-step escalation of attacks. I'm wondering, do you think this was the right move militarily and strategically?
It was an opportunity, Anderson. I don't want to comment on whether it was right or wrong, because that's a binary choice. This guy was not a non-state actor like a lot of terrorists we have struck. He was, in fact, part of the government institution of Iran. So it's a different set of categories. It's a different type of strike. And I think that what has happened in the past is they've weighed the risk mitigation. Do we strike this guy and end the kinds of mass murders and terrorism that he has been conducting? And truthfully, I fought against some of the forces he trained. Soldiers that I led in Iraq actually faced some of the equipment that came in from Iran and was catastrophic in terms of their ability to destroy equipment and penetrate flesh. So this guy is certainly not someone that I admire as an enemy, but he was a hell of a general. Should we go back to your question? Should we strike someone like this? Should we kill them? Should, if given the opportunity? I really can't answer that question without knowing the risk mitigations of what is going to be the bigger picture. I think that's what has caused past presidents to hesitate about whether or not to strike him, of what will occur if he is struck. And I think we're now struggling with that a little bit. And I'm not sure the administration has completely taken that on, what are going to be the second and third order effects. But that's all part of the calculus whenever you conduct a strike against a high-value target like Soleimani was. He was an evil guy. A mass murderer, a war criminal, and a terrorist. So there's a lot of people dancing in the street, Kurds, Shia, Sunni, and Americans. But I got to tell you, there's going to be some repercussions for this.
All right. Everyone stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We have some more about these attacks, also including why President Trump's own words about re-election and an attack on Iran are now back in the news, what he said about Obama and attacking Iran and the election, and now what he did. We'll be right back. President Trump defended the attack that killed Iran's top military and intelligence leader today, saying the Iranian general was planning, quote, a very major attack, in the president's words. And that may be true, and we can't confirm that. It is ironic, given how publicly the president has attacked this very same U.S. intelligence on Iran. Last year, he contradicted the sworn testimony of several of his top intelligence people and said Iran was developing nuclear missiles. He said anyone who stated otherwise was, quote, extremely passive and naive when it comes to the dangers of Iran, unquote. It also is ironic because years ago, before he became president, Mr. Trump repeatedly suggested that President Obama would gin up a war with Iran to win re-election.
I believe that he will attack Iran sometime prior to the election because he thinks that's the only way he can get elected.
Back with us, Clarissa Ward, Josh Rogan, retired Lieutenant General Mark Hertling. Josh, I'm wondering what you make of those, you know, who suggested there's a lot of chatter about that today, this sort of a wag the dog situation to try to distract from the, you know, president's political battles at home.
Well, covering the Trump administration for 3 years, I can say with a lot of confidence that they're not savvy enough to pull that off, okay? There's not that much strategery going on here. We have a president who very clearly does not want a war with Iran, and we have a set of policies that are very clearly leading us up an escalation ladder to that war. That's not design. That's just policy chaos that we've seen over all this time. Remember, President Trump is driven by two foreign policy instincts, right, to get us out of the Middle East, and also to be really tough on Iran. And those two things are completely in contradiction with each other. And that's why you have what we see here today, which is an incoherent policy that's leading us down a road that we can't see the end of. And that's the most dangerous thing of all.
General Hertling, just from a military standpoint, in terms of planning something like this, there's obviously, you know, the decision to strike someone like Soleimani. There's the planning for that. But the planning for what happens afterward, there's so many potential moving parts. There's so many potential proxy forces that Iran has influence over. How do you even go about planning for something like that, the ripple effects?
One of the things, Anderson, I've been watching today has been what appears to be a lack of a coordinated effort with allies, with partners, especially the partners of Iraq, as they're struggling through the formation of a democratic republic. And the notification of the kinds of people that would help us in these situations and the planning for military forces to move and to deploy. It seems like there's been a lot of ad hocism in this, that things have come after the fact. That concerns me. But when you're talking talking about planning an operation, it's often wargamed, where you take a red team approach. And what I mean by that is you say, okay, if we do this, what might happen? And then you actually plan the branches and the sequels that might occur, and you have a plan for each one of the events that may occur, and you mitigate the risk associated with the kinds of attacks you're planning. I don't see any of that happening. There has been incoherence in terms of even the messaging coming out from different members of the government. There seems to be a lack of planning, just the deployment of military forces, having the IRF go in after the attacks took place, and the fact that it seemed to be a response based on instantaneous intelligence that was derived over weeks or months, as some of the military forces are saying. So all of these things play a part in, I'll back up what Josh says, there seems to be a lack of strategy in terms of exactly what it is we want to accomplish, not only with Iran, but also the neighbors that are part of the area.
Well, also, Clarissa, what's fascinating is sort of what happens in Iraq next, because, I mean, obviously the political situation, the military situation in Iraq is unstable and extremely complex, and Soleimani is involved with all these Shia militias in Iraq, backing them, fighting with them against ISIS. But those Shia militias are still there, and there's a lot of Iraqi politicians in parliament who are backed by Iran, who tilt toward Iran as opposed to the U.S.
100%, Anderson. And you just heard General Hertling talking about the importance of alliances, of strategizing with the U.S. allies on the ground, particularly in a country like Iraq, where the U.S. is so vulnerable to an Iranian attack or an Iranian proxy attack. And yet what we're seeing, actually, is a breaking down of the relationship between the U.S. and the Iraqis, because the Iraqis don't just view this attack on Soleimani, and by the way, not just Soleimani, but another Iraqi Shia militia leader was also killed in that strike. They don't just see this as a sort of infringement upon their sovereignty. They see it as an attack on Iraq, because it puts Iraqi leaders, Anderson, in an impossible position. The Iranians can turn out the lights in Iraq tomorrow if they want to. That is how much power they have. Iraq cannot afford to have enmity with Iran. Iran has a huge amount of power in the form of influence, in the form of finances, in the form of those Shia militias, which you mentioned as well. And so now Iraq finds itself on very unstable ground. Unstable politically, unstable in terms of how it can continue to defend the U.S.'s presence in its country. And that makes things all the more vulnerable and dangerous for U.S. civilians and military personnel who are based overseas in Iraq.
Yeah, Clarissa Ward, Josh Rogan, Lieutenant General Mark Hertling, I appreciate it. Thank you. Just ahead, a member of the House Intelligence Committee and former CIA officer, Will Hurd, joins me to discuss how we got to this moment and whether or not he agrees with at least one lawmaker who today called the killing a, quote, assassination. We'll be right back. So how do we get to this present moment in the crisis with Iran? After the Trump administration withdrew from the Iranian nuclear deal in May of 2018, tensions between the two countries began to rise. First, there were more economic sanctions from the U.S. Iran then promised to no longer fully comply with the deal. Oil tankers were seized by Iran. An Iranian tanker was also seized. Each country has also shot down at least one drone. The crisis spiked last Friday. That's when a U.S. civilian contractor was killed and others were wounded in a rocket attack by an Iranian-backed militia. On Sunday, U.S. retaliation included the bombing of three militia control sites in Iraq. On Tuesday, supporters of the militia attacked the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. Yesterday, as we've been discussing, Qasem Soleimani, the top military and intelligence figure in Iran, was killed in a U.S. drone strike. Joining me now is Congressman Will Hurd, a former CIA officer who's now a member of the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman Hurd, thanks for being with us. I'm wondering, first of all, just overall, obviously Soleimani was a killer, is responsible for the deaths of hundreds, if not more, Americans, American forces, and also probably hundreds of thousands of people in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere. Was it strategically wise to do this?
Yes, I think this was a good move. This is what happens to heads of terrorist organizations. You've gave the laid up of what the Iranian government has been doing. You've talked about what Qasem Soleimani has done in the past. When you have an opportunity like this, you take it. And let's be frank, the Iranian government is not the victim here. They are the culprits. They are the ones, you know, everybody's talking about whether we're at war or not. We've been at war with Iran for 50 years. And this is an example of, if the Iranian government wants to truly have a de-escalation, then guess what? Stop killing Americans. Stop killing our allies. Stop trying to influence the elections in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Afghanistan, in Yemen. Stop killing your own people who are trying to peacefully protest. Stop lying about your nuclear weapons. These are all things that the Iranian government can do. And if they were to do that, then yes, let's start having a diplomatic conversations with them. And I wish this was something that many of my colleagues and some of our allies in Europe would join us in protesting, and because we should be focusing on the Iranian government's behavior and activities. Because you know, questioning and criticizing this decision can be viewed as support for the Iranian government. And that is a message that we do not want going to the Iranian regime and the rest of their forces.
Democratic Senator Chris Murphy earlier today labeled Soleimani's killing an assassination because Soleimani was not the head of a non-state terrorist group, was in fact a top official of a foreign government doing terroristic actions, killing American forces in Iraq and elsewhere, as I've said. Does that matter? Should there be a distinction?
If you're doing terroristic actions, then you're a terrorist. You can't hide behind a uniform in order to protect yourself and say you're not being a terrorist. This is something that the Iranian government has been doing for a long time. And the fact that people want to act like the Iranian government is the victim in this case is to me, outrageous. And yes, this is going to potentially get worse before it gets better. But what is the alternative? Sit and do nothing? Let our embassy get attacked once more? Let our troops be attacked even further to allow the Iranian government to continue to oppress their own people? They killed 1,500 people who were unarmed, peacefully protesting in their own country. This is not a government that is a rational government that can sit down at a negotiating table. And so we took someone who is the head of the most well-financed, organized terrorist organization in the world and took him off the battlefield. And I think today, his replacement and the other generals around him are second-guessing some of the decisions that they're going to make, because despite what the Iranian government said about these people want to be martyrs, they don't want to be martyrs. They want to live a long life. And now they're thinking again about whether some of these actions that they're trying to take is wise for them.
Are you for regime change should regime change be the policy of the United States for Iran?
I think the U.S. government and the rest of the international community should be supporting the Iranian people and let the Iranian people decide. We've seen these protests flare up time and time again. We know the economic situation that Iran is facing right now is possibly getting worse. And when they finally came to the negotiating table before the JCPOA, I do not think that the Iranian government is going to change their behavior because someone wants to negotiate with them. And ultimately, I've always learned this in my time in the CIA, be nice with nice guys and tough with tough guys, not the other way around. And again, we should be protecting American lives at every opportunity we can. And if that means preemptive action, we should. But we should also be bringing our allies with us, especially in Europe. The Iraqi government right now is headed by a Iranian proxy, in essence. He was doing such a bad job that the Iraqi people stood up and wanted to see change. That was ultimately a good thing. This is one reason why you see the Iranian government increasing their activity in Iraq. But we do need our European allies to join us and show that there is a united front against this terrible regime.
Well, Congressman Hurd, I appreciate your time and your perspective. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Up next, we're going to have more breaking news. The Washington Post reports House Democrats could soon be taking the next step on impeachment, but the killing of Qasem Soleimani could certainly complicate that. We'll have details on that ahead. There's more breaking news tonight. The Washington Post reports that House Democrats could be about to take the next action on impeachment, but the escalating tension with Iran is a top concern for some of them. Joining by phone is Josh Dossie, who's on the byline with the Washington Post and also a CNN political analyst. So, Josh, talk about how Iran and what effect it may be having on Democrats' impeachment strategy.
Well, the now current idea is to possibly put these forward next week. There's some concern among some Democrats that with all of the concern over national security, all of the talk about, you know, potential entanglement with Iran, with the strikes last night, with the potential for retaliation, that Democrats want to move ahead and put these articles forward next week. You saw some Republicans already, Anderson, come out and say, you know, Democrats are doing this while the president's in the middle of a, you know, big national security crisis. And there's a sense among at least a lot of the members of the Democratic caucus that the status quo cannot hold, that they need to go ahead and transmit these articles and not stay in this holding pattern. Obviously, next week, they'll come back from recess. The House and the Senate both come back early next week. And we're expecting some, you know, decisions to be made quickly thereafter.
You're also reporting that congressional Republicans or some congressional Republicans are enjoying what they think are bad optics for Democrats in all this.
Right. They are. They've had several weeks where they've been able to, you know, really hammer Nancy Pelosi and some of the other Democratic leadership for holding the articles. They think that there's a definite win coming for the president and the Senate. The Democrats know that, and they're able to just say, you know, you're holding these up for no reason. The president's out, you know, trying to get legislation done, trying to get USMCA done, you know, taking the step in Iran, and you should be moving these articles forward. What's also interesting is there's been a whole host of Republicans who have gone down to Mar-a-Lago over Christmas break. Lindsey Graham, the president's talked to Mitch McConnell, who are convincing him you really don't need witnesses. We've seen the president tweet publicly, you know, he wants Adam Schiff to testify, he wants Hunter Biden to testify, and a lot of these Republicans are trying to warm him to the idea of having a trial with no witnesses. Lindsey Graham told me on the phone yesterday that they're not going to be calling Hunter Biden. They're not going to be calling any of these witnesses. And the president seems increasingly okay with letting the Senate do it their own way. So what the White House said and what the senators are kind of preparing for now is a quick trial with likely no witnesses. The Democrat impeachment managers come up, present their case. Republicans do the same. And it's a proceeding that does not last particularly long.
Interesting. Josh Dossie, appreciate it. Thanks very much. Up next, more on what President Trump is saying about the U.S. drone attack that killed a senior Iranian commander. While questions persist about the timing, that plus reports from inside Iraq and Iran as well. We'll be right back.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.